नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम कैंटो 9 श्रीमद् भागवतम चैप्टर 6 एंटाइटल्ड द डाउनफॉल ऑफ शौबरी मुनि टेक्स्ट 52। वी आर रीडिंग टेक्स्ट 52 टू 54। आई जस्ट रीड 52 एंड 53 एंड देन वी विल चैंट टुगेदर 54। एकस्तपस्वी अहम अथम्बसि मत्स्य संगात पंचाशदासम उत पंच सहस्र सर्गा नान्तं व्रजामि उभया कृतया मनोरतानां माया गुणैर् हृतमतिर् विषय अर्थ भाव। ट्रांसलेशन: इन द बिगिनिंग आई वॉज अलोन एंड एंगेज्ड इन द परफॉर्मिंग ऑस्टेरिटीज ऑफ मिस्टिक योगा, बट लेटर बिकॉज ऑफ एसोसिएशन ऑफ द फिश एंगेज्ड इन सेक्स आई डिजायर्ड टू मैरी। Then I became the husband of 50 wives, and in each of them I begot 100 sons, and thus my family increased to 5,000 members. By the influence of the modes of material nature, I became fallen and thought that I would be happy in material life. Thus, there is no end to my material desires for enjoyment in this life and the next. Text 53. Evam vasham grihe kalam virakto nyasamastita वनम जगा मनुयायोस तत्पत्न्या पतिदेवता। इन दिस वे ही पास्ड हिज लाइफ इन हाउस होल्ड अफेयर्स फॉर सम टाइम, बट देन ही बिकेम डिटैच्ड फ्रॉम मटीरियल एंजॉयमेंट। टू रिनाउंस मटीरियल एसोसिएशन ही एक्सेप्टेड द वनप्रस्थ ऑर्डर एंड वेंट टू द फॉरेस्ट। हिज डिवोटेड वाइव्स फॉलोड हिम फॉर दे हैड नो अदर शेल्टर देन देयर हस्बैंड्स। विल चैन दिस वर्स टुगेदर। तत्र तप्त्वा तपस्तिक्ष्णम् आत्मदर्शनमात्मवान् सहे वाग्निभिर् आत्मानम् युयोज परमात्मनि। ट्रांसलेशन: व्हेन सौबरी मुनि हु वाज क्वाइट कन्वर्सेंट विद द सेल्फ वेंट टू द फॉरेस्ट ही परफॉर्म्ड सीवियर पेनेंसेस। इन दिस वे इन द फायर At the time of death, he ultimately engaged himself in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. At the time of death, fire burns the gross body. And if there is no more desire for material enjoyment, the subtle body is also ended. And in this way, a pure soul remains. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Tyaktva Deha Punarjanmam Naiti. If one is free from the bondage of both the gross and the subtle material bodies and remains a pure soul, he returns home back to Godhead to be engaged in the service of the Lord. Tektva deham punarjanmam naiti mam eti. He goes back home, back to Godhead. Thus it appears that Saubari Muni attained that perfect stage. Hare Krishna. I would like to beg and seek blessings of all the senior Vaishnavas assembled here, most of whom I have learned whatever I know in my spiritual life a little bit from, and embarrassing to be speaking in front of them because ultimately it's almost like speaking whatever they have spoken again. Nothing which I will speak is my own contribution, it's my own understanding and realization. I'm just trying to repeat what I've heard from all the people who are sitting here. So, this verse of the Bhagavatam, these three verses, is a very interesting section of the Bhagavatam because this is the summary of Saubari Muni's life presented by Saubari Muni himself. And because he is speaking himself, he is speaking with a lot of repentance and with a lot of regret in his heart. And we will discuss these three verses in some detail and try to understand what we can learn from these verses in our personal lives and what we should not learn from the life of Saubari Muni. I've just categorized this whole thing into a few points which I'll be mentioning, and then we'll derive lessons and understandings from each of these points. The first thing that we understand is here Saubari Muni has been inside the water and he's been trying to meditate and perform tapasya. And after many years of performing tapasya in this way, he finally sees something, two fishes enjoying, And that instigates his desire to enjoy life. And he goes out and enters into family life. But the interesting point is, the traditional understanding is being in association is very good. And being alone is very bad. That's what we understand. But here, if you observe, Sobarimuni inside the water, though he tried to be alone, he ended up in having association of these fishes. So it's not always that it seems that to be practicing spiritual life alone is a great proposal. But actually, if you analyze in the right perspective in this way, Sobarimuni, when he was alone, he was practicing very well. But when he got association of these fishes, he fell down. And so sometimes people think that practicing alone is always good. You know, we don't know what kind of association we'll get. So might as well just practice on our own. But this is how Maya actually tricks us. And at every stage, Maya tricks us very badly. And somehow or the other, Maya's whole game plan is to checkmate us at every stage of our life. And the nature of Maya is very interesting. The nature of Maya is that it seems that you can just grab her. But the moment you grab her, she turns and spits back at you. This is exactly what happened to Kamsa when Vasudev gave the baby girl to Kamsa. He just thought he's going to grab her and throw her and destroy her. But the moment he threw her, she turned back and spat back at him. She cursed him, in fact. So this is the nature of Maya. She always ends up tricking us. There's a nice story about a snake. There was a snake who came to a king of frogs. And this king of frogs, he was very, very proud of his position. And the snake realizes his fault. And the snake started glorifying him. He said, "The demigods have sent me to assist you and to be your carrier. So please sit on me and I'll take you wherever you want." So the frog, he thought, he became very proud. He thought, wow, a snake is supposed to be an enemy of a frog and the snake has become my servant. So it became a huge amount of pride for the frog. And he was roaming around. The snake was giving him a gala ride all over the place. And he was very proud that he's showing off to his subjects. And after a few days, once this king frog got addicted to the ride, and the snake started demanding. It said, "That I want something to eat. I'm feeling very weak." So naturally, the food for the snake is a frog. So the king frog said, "Okay, you can eat my lowest of disciples, lowest of followers." The snake ate up the lowest of followers. In a few days, all of them were over. Then the snake started eating up the royal family. And then he realized the frog was alone. And the snake ate him up also. So this is how Maya actually enters into somebody's life. I was hearing a very interesting lecture of Radhanath Swami. He was mentioning that when Maya enters somebody's life, she doesn't ask for a whole life. Maya never comes and tells us that, "Give me your life," you know. Maya tells us that, "Give your life to Krishna. You should give your whole life to Krishna." And Maya very interestingly proposes that, "I don't want your years, you know. All your years you should serve Krishna. I don't even want your months. You should serve Krishna for many, many months together. I don't even want your weeks. You know, you serve Krishna all week long. And I don't even want your days. You know, you deserve all your days for Krishna. And I don't even want your hours. You know, you serve Krishna every hour of the day, no problem." But Maya's only proposal is, "Give me one moment. Just give me one moment. And then your whole life is for Krishna." So the conditioned soul, being bewildered by Maya, just gives one moment to Maya. And that one moment of inattentiveness when given to Maya, it cascades and it doubles and triples. So like that, moment after moment, we give every moment to Maya, and at the end of the life, we realize that too much time has passed away. This is exactly what happened to Sobarimuni. He gave one moment of attention to Maya's proposal in the form of these fishes. And that one moment actually cost him his whole spiritual life. And moment after moment, he was engaged in marrying 50 wives, and then 100 children, then 200 children, then 500 children, then 5,000 children. And then after it was 5,000 children, he realized it's too much, too late. Of course, Sobarimuni had a chance to come back, but most of us don't have a chance to come back. And Therefore, we need to be careful of giving even one moment to Maya. And when Vasudeva was actually taking Krishna and keeping him back, when Vasudeva kept Krishna in the house of Nanda Maharaj, and he got back Maya Devi, the interesting observation is that when Krishna came out of the house of the jail of Kamsa, everyone fell asleep, and when Maya came in, everyone got awake, everyone became active. You know, that's the nature of Maya. Most of the times, the conditioned soul takes Maya very personally and doesn't take the scriptures, doesn't take the words of the Shastras very personally. We think that the scriptures are for somebody else and Maya is for us, because that's the nature of the conditioned soul. It becomes very active when there is something grossly attractive. But when it comes to spiritual discourses, very lazy. And there's no time. Most people find no time for attending spiritual classes. But the same people have unlimited time to attend number of movies. Every time the first movie is released, they can stand for hours in front of a ticket counter to buy a ticket and to make sure they attend the first movie. So when you ask them why there is so much attraction here and there's no so much attraction here, it's very clear. Maya is always attractive in her proposal. And to understand this, it's a very nice story of a hunter. He caught a flock of birds, and he told all the birds, you run away from me. So the birds felt that, wow, the hunter has caught us and he's liberating us, he's giving us freedom. So the birds, all of them, started flying away. And as each bird was flying away, the hunter took his gun, he was shooting each of them, and all of them were falling down. And one bird, he didn't die. The hunter didn't kill that bird, because this bird understood the mindset of the hunter, and it sat at the feet of the hunter. So because the bird sat at the feet of the hunter felt pity, and he didn't shoot the bird down. So this hunter is none other than Maya Devi, and Maya is another form or another energy of Krishna. So rather than running away from the hunter, if you take shelter of the same hunter, that's a saving grace. So rather than running away from Krishna's Maya, if you take shelter of Krishna's feet, that's the saving grace. So Srila Prabhupada, once he was sitting in a temple, and he was observing the photo of a painting of Krishna riding the chariot of Arjun, and after that Krishna instructing Bhagavad Gita to Arjun. And when Prabhupada saw this picture, he said, "This is a very nice picture, I like it very much." And one devotee asked him, what does it mean, Prabhupada? Prabhupada said, here Krishna is saying in this picture, Krishna is saying that you have to give up everything. And giving up everything is a difficult job, because for Arjuna, to give up his relatives, to give up killing his relatives, is a very difficult job. And Prabhupada said, this is real Krishna bhajan. Krishna bhajan means that one has to be ready to give up everything and do what Krishna wants. And if somebody can practice real Krishna bhajan, giving up what we think is right and following what Krishna thinks is right, that's like sitting at the feet of the hunter. So you'll not be shot down by Maya. So the other thing that Saubari Muni's life, he thought that he was going to practice spiritual life alone, and so he fell into trouble and Maya gave him some proposals. The other understanding is why Saubari Muni actually fell down is because he did not have the right association. It's not that association is bad. Bad association is bad. So if you take the right association, that association can elevate. So we need good association of sadhus. I was hearing the one devotee mentioning a very nice thing. He said that the Vedic scriptures, the knowledge that we get from the Vedas, is like paddy which is removed from the field. If you go to a field and remove paddy, there is husk, there is so many unwanted things for the grain, coverings for the grain. But this is what Vedic knowledge is compared to a paddy field where you can remove rice, but there is so much baggage to it. And the scriptures like Bhagavad Gita, which is actually the essence of all the Vedic scriptures, the essence of all the Vedic conclusions, are compared to even Srila Prabhupada's books, are compared to rice which is served, which can be obtained from a shop. You go buy rice from a shop, you don't get all the husk and all the paddy. You just get rice as it is. But the words of the spiritual master, the words of the sadhu, are like cooked rice. You can straight away eat it. You don't have to, endeavor. The Vedic scriptures have so much endeavor to give to understand the essence. Even the rice which is available in the shops, the Bhagavad Gita, it is palatable, but it has to be cooked again, realized and digested. But the Vedic, by the words of the spiritual master, the words of the sadhus are like cooked rice. Straight away eat them because they are digested, they are given in a format that is easily digestible for a conditioned soul. So, traditional understanding of material science, and there's a very classical difference between how the spiritual science works and how the material science works. Generally, when material scientists invent something, there are three types of inventions, you can say. One type of invention is an invention which is incidental. That means you plan to invent it, and so when you plan to invent an invention and you get it, you get that. Suppose somebody plans to invent some machine and he actually manages to invent it, that's called incidental. The second type of invention is called coincidental. That means you plan for something, but you get something else only. So that's coincidental inventions. And accidental invention is, that means you have no plan to invent something only, and suddenly you invent. This is the nature of material science, material inventions, where somebody puts an effort, and you get different things according to different causes, which are really beyond your control. But spiritual science works very differently. Irrespective of the giver, the thing is prominent in material science. The giver has no value. Like if a medicine is given, if you go to a pharmaceutical shop and you take a medicine, the same medicine will work if it is given by the hands of a MD, PhD doctor, or if it is given from the hands of a compounder, right? But spiritual science, it's opposite. Irrespective of the thing, the giver is important. The thing is secondary. So if medicine, the same thing, same result you get, whoever gives it. But in spiritual science, who gives it is important. The giver is important. Whether the giver gives you sweets or gives you mud. If the giver is powerful, if the giver is strong, and the giver is spiritually powerful, then whatever he gives you, that is important. That is valuable. Right? This is how spiritual science works. So the person who is giving is the most important thing. So therefore, Shaubhari Muni's life, you can learn that we need good association of somebody who can give us something valuable, regardless of how we perceive the thing to be, whether it is valuable or no. And regarding Shaubhari Muni's case, one of the prominent things that we can, it comes out in this pastime, and even in the previous pastime of Durvas Muni, is where mystic yogis have this innate tendency of having a great false ego. Mysticism and power, it gives you a false understanding of who you are. And just like if you see the keyboard in a computer or in a typewriter, there's a very different way of why these words are arranged in certain way. Most people don't understand why they are arranged in certain way. They just go to a typing institute and learn typing. Put your finger here, put your finger, you just learn typing. Very complicated arrangement of words. But if you understand why these words are put in a certain way, it's very funny. There was a man who invented the typewriter. His name was QWERTY, Q-W-E-R-T-Y. And he, of course, the second, so he had a surname also. So he wanted his name to be there on the keyboard. He wanted his name to be there on the keyboard. So because his name had to be there, he arranged the words in such a way that, each line of the typewriter shows his name. Just see, what a big false ego. Because his name had to be there, the whole world has to learn typing in such a, horrible way. And the words are arranged in certain... This is an exhibition of false ego, nothing else. So the tendency to impress people, the tendency to impress the world is innate in everyone's life. Just like in my college days, engineering, there was a huge... In our college campus, there was a boy. In front of our campus, we had a huge pathway. And generally, bikes were parked on one side, and there was a pathway for the cars and bikes to move around. So one boy, he had a bullet and he was used to showing off a lot. So what he would do during intervals, he would start from the beginning of the gate and he would ride his bullet full speed at great speed, 60, 70 kilometers an hour, you know. And at the end, just when he's reaching the end, he would do a wheelie, he'd jump up, you know. And his bike would actually scream, you know, the whole college could hear him coming. So basically, we're thinking that this is not the screaming of the bike, this is the screaming of his ego. His ego is actually screaming so much. Because the tendency to impress people is so strong and prominent in everyone, and that gets even more higher when you get mystic powers. This is how the false ego makes you proud. And the tendency of a spiritualist is he understands this ego. I was mentioning one time that Radhana Swami spoke this, that ego burns hotter than fire. And the tendency of a spiritualist, of somebody who understands the value of spiritual life, is that he can detect that ego. Like we were going in a... And the moment he detects the ego, he puts it off. Like I was in a hostel in a college, and there was a carpet. And somebody just lit a match, and somehow the match fell down on the carpet and started burning. So the moment it started burning, you know, somebody just stamped it and put off the fire. So when the fire is put off in the initial stage, there's hardly any damage that it can do. But if you let the fire burn, then it can actually damage the whole complex. So Lord Chaitanya, when he was discussing with Keshav Kashmiri, during this famous discussion, and Keshav Kashmiri spoke 100 verses of glorifying Mother Ganga, and then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found the defect, you know, in one verse, the 64th verse out of the 100 verses. So what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was doing was not finding the defect in his words. He was actually finding a defect in his ego. And because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found the defect in his ego, he wanted to correct it. So that is the tendency of a devotee, that is the tendency of the Lord, that the spiritualists have a very unique combination. They see little ego, the moment they see little ego, they focus on only that. And they, you know, kind of make it big and show it to the world that this is your ego. Spiritualists act like that. And many times that demonstration of our ego to the world is very painful. But the spiritualists also do the opposite. If they see a little good in us, they pick up that good and really elaborate on that good. So both the cases, they go to both extremes. They see a little ego and focus on that ego, and they see a little good and focus on that good. But in both cases, in the case of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or in case of somebody else trying to find a little good in some devotee, in both cases, the spiritualist and the Lord, they don't show their own ego to prove themselves. So here in case of Keshav Kashmiri, it's not that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was finding the defect of Keshav Kashmiri in his ego and proving that he is great. He only showed the defect and hid himself, hid his own greatness. This is the tendency of a spiritualist, tendency of the Lord. And what is the cause of this disease, of disease of the false ego, disease of misunderstanding the purpose of life and falling down? In case of Saubari Muni, I was reading Nectar of Instruction, the 7th verse of Nectar of Instruction, where which talks about actually the chanting of the holy names being the perfect process. It's a very interesting observation. In the purport, Prabhupada writes that the cause of the disease, you know, the cause of disease, what is the disease? The disease is avidya or ignorance. The cause of the disease is forgetfulness of Krishna and taking shelter of durashraya. The very interesting word Prabhupada uses, durashraya. He says durashraya means false shelter. So when somebody takes shelter of something false, something bad, then that shelter gives you two things. When somebody takes shelter of maya, which takes shelter of something that is false, then what happens? Two things happen. First thing that happens is you have hope against hope, that there is some hope for enjoyment. You have a hope against hope that there is some possibility of enjoyment. This is what false shelter leads you to. And the second thing that happens when you take false shelter is you cannot understand your own mistakes. You cannot understand your own mistakes. And because you cannot understand your own mistakes, you keep repeating the same mistakes again and again and again and again. So this is what happens when somebody takes shelter of something false. take shelter of Durashraya, Maya. And there are two ways of seeing this world. One way of seeing this world is that the world is full of problems. And you try to solve each problem at every stage that when it comes in your life. The other way of seeing the world is that the world is not meant to be lived. It's not a place to be lived in. And because the world is full of problems, it gives us more impetus to get out from this world. These are the two different ways of seeing this world. Dhritarashtra is a very typical case of somebody who took shelter of something false in his life, and all his life he was hoping against hope that there is going to be enjoyment. And all his life he kept committing mistakes, and he could not even understand that he's committing a mistake. And then he kept repeating the same mistake again and again and again. And it took Vidura, it took an intellectual like Vidura, who had the vision to see what's going wrong in his life, for him to speak. So I just thought we'll focus a little bit on this pastime of Vidura and Dhritarashtra, and what kind of lessons that Vidura gave to Dhritarashtra. It's very interesting. And if you read the section of the Srimad Bhagavatam on the first canto, where the chapter of Dhritarashtra quits home, you see that the way Vidura chastises Dhritarashtra is so powerful that somebody might think, why is he chastising his own brother like this? Somebody might think, you know, why is he doing this? And it seems to be like really very heavy for anyone to even hear those statements. But there is a purpose why Vidura does that. Because this man, Dhritarashtra, it's not that Vidura was the first person speaking to him about this. Practically all his life, different devotees, different personalities have been telling him that he is doing wrong. But the whole propaganda, the whole understanding of Dhritarashtra was so filled with ignorance that he didn't have the guts, he didn't have the courage to actually say that he was wrong. And at different times, Akrura preached to Vidura. Vyasadeva, right in the beginning when Duryodhana was born, he told Dhritarashtra, throw this Duryodhana away. He's only going to cause fall down of your whole family. And even Dhritarashtra was practically the only second person who heard the whole Bhagavad Gita when Arjuna spoke. When Krishna spoke the Gita to Arjuna, even Dhritarashtra heard the whole Gita. But even after hearing Krishna's words personally, even after hearing the words of Akrura, even after hearing the words of Vyasadeva, he never changed. He never gave up. So then, the only means that Vidura had to actually change him was the power of his words. And he gave such powerful words that actually it changed Dhritarashtra's vision of life. If you actually analyze it, Dhritarashtra was living a life which was greatly sinful, and it was actually a shameless life. And he lived a life of great sin. And he was trying to prolong the facilities to bring him more and more enjoyment. Just trying to push a little bit more to get a little more. Trying to push a little bit more to get a little more. And when the Vidura starts speaking, he starts telling him that look at yourself. Your liver is not functioning. Your body is deteriorating. He's saying you're coughing, you're hard of hearing, you're blind first, and now you're hard of hearing also. And he's telling, still all your organs of the body are shutting down because of old age. And he says, still you're trying to claim something to enjoy this world. And he starts chastising him by saying that you are practically like a dog who is being fed some morsels of food by Bhima. And he specifically used Bhima's words because Bhima is the one who killed all his 100 sons. He could have said so many others. He could have used the words, name of Yudhishthira Maharaj. But he said Bhima. Because Bhima is the one who actually did the maximum damage to Dhritarashtra. And he chastised him like that. So this is what happens when we live a life exploiting the property of God in so many ways. And but the power of time, everything is gradually stripped away from us, taken away. Our health, our power of enjoyment, and our every facility of life is taken away gradually. And even after all that, we still cling on to hope that after a little longer time, we will experience some enjoyment. But if you see the life of Dhruva Maharaj, when Dhruva Maharaj actually met the Lord, when he saw the Lord, before he saw the Lord, he had 100 things that he wanted to achieve in life, right? He had a whole plan of what he wanted to do in life. He had a vision of what he wanted to achieve in life. But after he met the Lord, the moment he met the Lord, everything collapsed. Everything changed. And Dhruva Maharaj, the prayer he made, he said that I was looking for broken glasses, broken pieces of glasses, but I found a rare and precious diamond in the form of your grace, in the form of the grace of the Lord. But the material civilization is exactly opposite of what Dhruva Maharaj's conclusion is. Material civilization, it is actually saying, throw away this rare diamond of Krishna consciousness and accept these wonderful glasses, pieces of glasses. And people accept the broken pieces of glasses of material enjoyment and throw away the real diamond. And the world is proposing that the glass, the glitter of the glass is more shiny and more glittering than the glitter of a diamond. And but what is the glitter of a glass? What is a glass? Glass has no longevity. Glass has no value. And glass, when it is held in your hand, it only makes your hand bleed. It only makes your hand bleed. This is what material enjoyment will lead to. Ultimately, the broken pieces of glasses cause only pain and blood. And the materialistic society, when a person, this is a very interesting thing, when a person is on the deathbed and he is actually fighting against death, if you actually observe the way the world reacts to a person fighting against death in his deathbed, it is actually a great glorification. When somebody is undergoing a great disease and after a prolonged duration of disease, he comes out of it, you know, the world actually starts glorifying such a person. He says, what determination, what enthusiasm to live life, you know. And people encourage somebody who is dying like that with words of encouragement. But actually, if you see that here, Vidura is actually chastising Dhritarashtra. That though he was, I mean, if actually Dhritarashtra lived now, he would have been glorified the most by the world, because he faced the greatest of calamities, greatest of failures, greatest of dangers. And in spite of that, he's not giving up. In spite of that, he's trying his best to enjoy living life king size, even at the end, fag end of his life. So this is the nature of the materialist civilization, which tries to glorify somebody who's even dying and hope against hope trying to enjoy, still there is no facility for him to enjoy, and that is glorified by the world. But Vidura is very clear here. Vidura is very blunt here, saying that you're a fool. He calls his own brother a great fool. And when somebody is really intelligent, real intelligence means to give up the bleeding process of material enjoyment, giving up the process of playing with broken pieces of glass and accepting the rare diamond of Krishna consciousness. And when it seems, apparently, when the devotee lives his life in this world and when a materialist lives his life in the world, it seems they're doing the same thing. Even a devotee tries to fight his disease. Even a materialist tries to fight his disease. Even a devotee tries to struggle and live in this world, and even a materialist is doing the same thing. But what is the difference between the two? The difference between the two is very simple. One is doing it out of attachment for attachment to illusion and attachment to the broken piece of glass. And the other is doing it so that he can pursue the higher truth of life. Just this difference in consciousness makes the purpose different, makes the vision totally different, and makes the understanding of life totally different. So there's a very clear distinction between how a materialist lives his life and how a spiritualist lives his life. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about Yanisya Sarva Bhutanam Yasyam Jagrata Samyami Tasyam Jagrata Bhutani Sanisha Pashyate Muni. He says, very clear distinction. What is day for a materialist is night for a spiritualist, and what is night for a spiritualist is day for a materialist. So what is broken pieces of glass for a spiritualist is like rare diamond for the materialist. And what is a rare diamond for a materialist, what is a rare diamond for a materialist is like broken piece of glass for a spiritualist. Exactly opposite. And the most powerful thing in this whole episode of Dhritarashtra and Vidura is that as long as Dhritarashtra was actually successful in his life, actually successful in his pursuance of illusion, he was not able to understand the words of Vidura. It's not that Vidura spoke different words now and different words before. All his life, Vidura has been speaking the same thing to Dhritarashtra. But now, after failures, now after, you know, drawbacks, and now after so much of the way in which the world has dealt with him, the way in which Krishna in the form of time has dealt with him, Dhritarashtra began to change his opinion, began to change his perspective of life. And now, Dhritarashtra actually begins to accept what Vidura said. And somebody might say, why did Vidura, why was he, you know, concerned so much with Dhritarashtra? The fact is, Vidura was not really concerned with the material life of Dhritarashtra. Vidura was concerned about his spirit soul. He wanted to save the soul of Dhritarashtra. And that was the only concern of Vidura. A spiritualist is not concerned what happens with the material body of a person, but is concerned with what happens to the spirit soul who is dwelling in that body. And Vidura was trying to save that soul of Dhritarashtra from the greatest calamity, greatest fall down. Srila Prabhupada, when Jayananda Prabhu, one of the senior disciples of Srila Prabhupada, left his body, 1 year before Srila Prabhupada left, Prabhupada wrote a letter to Jayananda Prabhu. It's very interesting. Jayananda Prabhu has gone away. Whom is he writing a letter to? Actually, Prabhupada wrote a letter to his soul. Because the spiritualist, the spiritual master, is not concerned with the body of the disciple. Prabhupada wrote a letter to the soul of Jayananda Prabhu, congratulating him for achieving perfection in his spiritual life. So this is the mood of a spiritualist. And this is the mood in which a spiritualist deals with us, in spite of our defects. And Shaubari Muni, the one good thing in Shaubari Muni was that he was honest. And at least Shaubari Muni was honest about his fall down. Shaubari Muni was honest about the fact that he went wrong. And this honesty is the hope for somebody. So if someone has faults, that's not a problem. But if he is not ready to admit his faults, that is the problem. Dhritarashtra had unlimited faults. That is not the problem. The problem was he was not ready to admit the faults. And that is why Vidura had to chastise him. Vidura had to deal with him in such a way. So when a honest man speaks something, even a demon accepts those words. Like when Vasudev spoke to Kamsa, when Vasudev promised Kamsa that he'll give back the third child, the eighth child, and he said he'll give every child, Kamsa immediately accepted it. Because honesty is very much appreciated in this world. And to be honest and to have integrity is a very painful thing. But to be dishonest and to be shameless is actually to be hypocritical is a very shameful thing. And Vasudev had to undergo a lot of pain giving each child of his. But at least he stuck to his integrity and honesty. So the investment of honesty is a very painful thing, but it's a very satisfying thing. And there are some more things I'll just summarize in a few minutes about what we can learn from Shaubari Muni's life. Mystic powers or mystic powers means you're trying to put yourself in as comfortable a position as possible and not ready to take shelter of Krishna. Spiritualism is the definition of spiritualism, very interesting definition of spiritualism is it teaches you how to repair the repairabilities of life and how, if something is not repairable, how to withstand or how to tolerate. So it teaches you two things. The path of recovery, the path of repairability when something goes wrong, and the path of withstanding, the path of tolerance when you can't repair, when things are beyond your scope of repair. And Shaubari Muni's life is very, very much characterized by this aspect of trying to enjoy life, not being able to enjoy life, and at least being honest about his fall down, and then taking up spiritual life very seriously. So, this realization, this acceptance that I am wrong, this acceptance that life, material life is no fun, even for somebody to come to this conclusion, that is a very advanced stage, that is a very advanced platform, to conclude that materialistic life is no fun. And why that's an advanced stage? Because the dharma of human life, dharma is actually the motto of human life. And understanding and practicing dharma, practicing this motto of human life and preaching it is actually the goal of human life. And it becomes a duty of human life. So when somebody goes back to his original position, understanding the material life is not fun and real need is to practice spiritual life, that is when he actually understands what is the purpose of life. And this purport, Prabhupada is talking about desires. He's saying that at the time of death, fire burns the gross body, and if there is no more desire for material enjoyment, the subtle body is also ended. And in this way, a pure soul remains. So Krishna consciousness, in one sentence, is nothing but desire management. Managing your desires rightly. And this story of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which it talks about this boatman, who's trying to ride a marriage party to the other side of the river. And the whole night he's driving, he's trying to work hard, extremely sweating the whole night. But when the dawn begins, he realizes the boat is still there. And the understanding Bhaktisiddhanta gives is that the anchor was still there. So as long as the anchor of attachment is still there, as long as the anchor of desiring to enjoy material life is still there, you can't reach the other side. And somebody who's practicing spiritual life, he might say that I'm chanting 16 rounds, I'm doing so many things, but I'm not progressing. The reason why we're not progressing is because the anchor is still there. The anchor of material enjoyment is still there. And Maya, she keeps giving us these proposals of how this anchor should be there, has to remain there. And there's a very interesting episode in the Ramayana where Sita Devi, she's actually one of the rare instances where Sita Devi is actually chastising Ram. She tells Ram that, why are you roaming around with a bow in your hand in the forest? We have come as hermits in the forest. We have come as hermits. We are not anymore kings and queens. We are just hermits. So why are you roaming around with a bow in your hand? And while she's speaking about that, she talks about how when there are three reasons why somebody enjoys sense gratification, and there are these are the definite products of desire, she says. The first reason is that, the first causes of somebody trying to enjoy sense gratification is that, first is when one speaks untrue words, and when somebody speaks untrue words, that is wrong. The second is fascination for other people's wives, and the third is cruelness without enmity. Cruelness without enmity. She says these three things. And she tells Ram that the first two don't exist in you. You don't speak untrue words. And you're not even concerned about other people's wives. But the third defect is in you, that you are trying to act cruel without enmity. You have nothing to do with the demons. Why are you carrying a bow and arrow? And then she tells the story of Indra, who comes. He sees one ascetic, one sage, advancing very rapidly. So whenever Indra sees a sage advancing rapidly, he comes. And then he comes dressed as a soldier. And he gives this sage a sword. He tells the sage, please take care of this sword. I'll come back and collect it from you. And he tells the sage that this sword is very precious to me, and you know, so many things, and he goes out. The sage, being honest and being truthful, he realizes that this is a duty now to protect the sword. And he carries the sword everywhere. You know, he's trying to meditate. He's holding the sword and trying to meditate. He's going to get fruits. He goes with the sword to get fruits. Now, whatever he does, he's doing with the sword in his hand. And then slowly, because of the association with the sword, he actually thinks, let me try using it. You know, and he starts using the sword, and he actually falls down from his ascetism. And he actually commits a great sin. So Sita Devi is telling Maya, this is the understanding we can get from this. Maya, she gives us different things to take care of. And she tells us, take care of this thing for me. But if you forget the connection of that thing with Krishna, then only the thing remains. And then only when the thing remains, then there is a collapse, there is a fall down. So this is what happened in the case of Nalakuvera and Manigriva. This whole month is a Kartik month. If you compare Nalakuvera and Manigriva with Saubari Muni, Nalakuvera and Manigriva were the sons of Kuvera, and they went into the water to try to enjoy. And Saubari Muni was in the water, he came out of the water to enjoy. And both of them experienced the same thing. No satisfaction of desires. Whether you go into the water or you come out of the water, material desires, material enjoyment is the same thing. It's no fun. And on the other hand, Nalakuvera and Manigriva, being the sons of Kuvera, they had unlimited wealth to enjoy. You see the life of Dhruva Maharaj. When Dhruva, he killed all the hundreds of demons, and Kuvera, the treasurer of the demigods, the leader of the Yakshas, he wanted to award Dhruva Maharaj something. Dhruva Maharaj could have asked him for unlimited wealth, because Kuvera had all that. But what he asked him, very interesting, he spoke a verse which says, this Maitreya Muni, he's telling Vidura this. He says that, Saraja Rajena Vareyo Chodito, Dhruva Mahabhagavato Mahamati, Haroso Vavra Chalitam Samritim Vaya, Tatrati Ayatnena Duratyayam Tama. He says, my dear Vidura, when thus asked to accept a benediction from Kuvera, the Yaksharaj, the king of the Yakshas, Dhruva Maharaj, the most elevated pure devotee, who was intelligent and thoughtful king, begged that he might have unflinching faith in and remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For thus a person can cross over the ocean of nescience very easily. And although it is very difficult for others to cross. So Dhruva, instead of asking him for wealth, he asked him for faith in Krishna consciousness. So when we realize that, when we ask for this, instead of having material enjoyment, the material desires, the mystic powers, we ask for faith in God, faith in Krishna consciousness, that is where there is hope. So Krishna is ready to give credit to even Kalyavan. Kalyavan was sleeping. I mean, Muchukunda was sleeping. But he gave the credit to Muchukunda for killing Kalyavana. So Muchukunda really didn't do a great effort to kill Kalyavana. But he got the credit, right? So Krishna can give even a sleeping person the power to destroy the biggest of demons. And the light of the Bhagavata explains very interesting. Shyamananda Guru was mentioning this sometime back, how the light of Bhagavata talks about a rainbow in the sky. And it seems that the rainbow is a bow, but the bow without a support. You know, there's no support for the bow. How is the bow bent? Generally, the bow is bent when there's a string that supports the bow. But in the case of the rainbow, there is no string. Actually, that support is the support of Krishna. And this is what happens when somebody takes shelter of Krishna. Krishna gives them unlimited support. And if somebody doesn't take shelter of Krishna, he has to be embarrassed, like Saubari Muni. So the ocean, this verse that Dhruva Maharaj is talking about, crossing of an ocean is very difficult. What is an ocean? Ocean has unlimited problems. Ocean is compared to the material world, which has unlimited problems in the form of a Timingala fish. Some problems may be really big, huge problems. Some problem might be like small tadpoles and very small fishes. Whatever it is, the ocean has an unlimited number of problems too in it. The material world has an unlimited number of problems in it. But what is Krishna's promise? If we take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, the same ocean which is compared to the material world is compared to an ocean, it shrinks to the water in the hoofprint of a calf. So what problems can be in a hoofprint of a calf? You know, what can even a fish swim in the hoofprint of a calf? Even a fish can't swim. There is small dirt, small particles of dirt in the hoofprint of a calf. So those small particles of dirt are insignificant for us. So when somebody takes shelter of Krishna, the problems of this world, which seem so huge, appear very small and appear almost insignificant. So this is the lessons we can learn from Saubari Muni's life. I'm sorry, I've been speaking so many things which without realization, without understanding many times. And I'm thankful to all of you all that you all have tolerated me. But now the test begins. Now that I've spoken, the test begins. It said in the Niti Shastra that what is the difference between a cuckoo and a crow? The difference between a cuckoo and a crow, the color is same. Kaka Krishna, Pika Krishna. Color of cuckoo and color of the crow is just the same, black. But when the springtime comes, that is when you can make out the difference. The cuckoo starts singing and beautiful voice comes out. So I've spoken so many things, but now I have to practice. Then this is a real test. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai.